your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond. Welcome back to a very special series of Alchemy, and I've got three amazing guests today. Melissa Hobley, CMO at OkCupid, Jesse Channon, Chief Growth Officer at Columbia Care, and Travis Freeman, Global Head of Media at Uber. Guys, so great to have you guys together. First time we've done this actually with three guests instead of one. So thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
I wanted to get you guys all together on the show, mainly because you all come from very unique industries. You know, Melissa, obviously you're the CMO of OkCupid, and you know, the theme of the show today is really companies that have thrived during the pandemic. So here we are a full year into COVID. It's changed a lot of things, changed a lot of, you know, the way businesses operate. So kind of starting with you, Melissa, obviously from a dating perspective, a lot of people have been using apps to communicate and try to find that connection. So you guys have really had a crazy year for people really engaging. You know, stats are up astronomically. So be looking for some interesting insight from you. Travis, obviously Uber Eats, everybody's been home. Everybody's been, you know, ordering delivery. So you guys have seen like a phenomenal rise for your business. And Jesse, you know, Jesse, obviously Columbia Care, cannabis. Cannabis was deemed essential this year during COVID. So sales have been through the roof. So kind of really exciting having you three together to kind of, you know, talk about, you know, one, how your businesses have really thrived and how we could learn from them. Obviously, some businesses also were not as fortunate, unfortunately. And, you know, just something to think about as we kind of go on. And these are things that have never happened to us really in our lifetimes before. So I think before we get started, guys, I thought it might be fun just to learn a little bit more about you guys. But also, I had a quick question, which I thought was kind of fun. But if you guys were actual wrestlers, what would your theme song entrance be? Melissa, we'll start with you. I know I'm just throwing this out here really quick, but I thought like...
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. Okay, so my entrance song, I'm from Indiana. And so I'd have to go with John Mellencamp, John Cougar Mellencamp, if you're kicking it old school. And I probably have to go with like Authority. That's such a good hype song. And maybe my like wrestling character is like sticking it to the man. So I go with Authority, John Mellencamp, as like an ode to my corn-fed Indiana roots.
That was very good thinking on a whim. I like that. Who wants to go next? Travis, Jesse? Jesse's, I already see he's having a hard time with it.
Yeah. I'll go. I'll give Jesse some time to think. Mine is like less of a hype song versus I feel like it's just showing the seriousness that I have towards like being a wrestler if I was a wrestler. But I think I would do 9 to 5 by Dolly Parton. just to like... I'm all in this. Like also Dolly Parton is my idol. I'm from the South. But it's like, you know what? This isn't a hobby for me. This is like what I'm doing, right? Like I am like committed to this. And honestly, maybe throw some acrylics on and a wig. And that also becomes part of my character.
Like a good 80s power suit. That's a good one.
Shoulder pads for days. Like designing women type shoulder pads. I'm in.
I love it. Jesse's still thinking. I can't.
I shouldn't have let Travis go first because he took my song. So that's already putting me at a disadvantage. I feel like maybe Footloose, and I come in with like an acrobatic Kevin Bacon sort of montage as my entrance. So yeah, I'm gonna go with a sleeveless Kevin Bacon entrance to Footloose. That's how I'm coming in as a wrestler.
Right, I like it. That's good thinking.
I like it.
Wait, Jesse, acrobatic, like from the ceiling acrobatic or more kind of like
you know,
floating
like when
in?
He's through the warehouse?
Yeah.
No, like very aggressive. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I want people to be super frightened.
No, I get it. I could see it.
Awesome. So now I think now our viewers actually know a little more about you guys and what you're thinking. So, you know, Travis, maybe we'll start with you. I think, you know, obviously during COVID, people are actually nervous and scared to be out in the early days, too, even just going to the grocery store. I think some people even were, you know, somewhat scared to take an Uber, for that matter. But then on the flip side, you have a lot of people who are like, I don't want to go out. I want everything coming to me. So, you know, I think for you, it was kind of both, you know, highs and lows. And how did you guys deal with that? Obviously, there was a surge in deliveries. And just curious, like, how you guys kind of tackled that, something that you probably had no idea you'd see a spike like this so fast.
Yeah. I think if Uber does one thing really well, it's that we operate well under crisis. And it kind of creates urgency for us to, like, just shift how we're thinking about the business. So, you know, when everything happened, you know, we just completely shifted all of our priorities internally, not only from a marketing standpoint, but an engineering standpoint, to a business standpoint, to an operations standpoint, all the way over to the Uber Eats business. So we saw that, you know, people needed to be able to get sustenance, to get food, and we didn't want them to go out. So I think that's been the really refreshing thing from my side working in tech, is like just the ability to kind of, you know, shift those priorities to the business, because all we focused on beforehand was our rides business. And we're like, yeah, we've got this Eats business and it's great, right? But it's not what's driving the business. We're going to focus on rides. That's where most of our budget's going to be. That's where most of our resources are going to be. And then we shifted that overnight to kind of just focusing on the business of Uber Eats. But what I thought was even more kind of like special for me is while we were pushing the business on that side, we took the opportunity on the ride side and the master brand side to actually take a step back and stand for something. So to your point, like, we were wanting people, and we came out and said, like, thank you for not riding with Uber, right? Like, thank you for not using our product, because you're part of our cure, right? You're part of not spreading this virus. And you're also making it so that frontline healthcare workers and frontline workers in general actually have a place that they can use whenever they're needing to go to the hospital every single day. So, you know, we were giving out free rides, we were giving out free meals, we were making sure that we were supporting those people on the front lines, all while also kind of like pushing the business on the other side. So I think Uber has been really focused on short-term ROI, right, for a really long time. I think this was a really interesting moment for us to actually take a step back and look at long-term ROI and brand building, and how actually we're standing up for the right thing, not necessarily the right thing for our business, but the right thing for humans and kind of the world overall. So it was a pretty organic shift, but a seismic shift at the same time, right? To kind of make that change.
Not to mention a double acquisition in a year.
Yeah, no. And well, I think that was also the cool thing is, like, honestly, I think a year ago, I don't know if these acquisitions would have happened, because I don't know if we were focusing as much on the delivery side. But then we started to see, it's like, okay, cool. Like, everyone is going all in. It's not just us. It's DoorDash. It's Grubhub. It's everyone needs food, and we're all in this together. But then we also sort of like, this is a really cool opportunity with the number one alcohol delivery partner, right? Like, in the country. And as we move into more of this world of, like, no matter where consumers want to go, or no matter what consumers want to get, that go and get kind of dichotomy, like, we are that all-encompassing movement of goods and services, whether you're a human that you need to move, or you want to bake a cake and send it to your friend across town, or you want to get, like, a bottle of Kettle One, right? Like, it's that moment that you can actually have all of that moved through one single service.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing in just 1 year. How your business went from A to D. Cool. Great insight. So Jesse, you know, big year for you guys too, obviously on the cannabis front. You guys have been, every day I kind of blink an eye and there's a new acquisition for Columbia Care. But really, I think for you guys, you know, cannabis was deemed essential. More and more states are coming on board from a legalization perspective, like, massive shift in the last 12 months alone, even just, you know, to consumers across the whole entire country who might not have been exposed to this before, are literally, you know, gung-ho on, you know, we call them, I guess, canna curious, folks who have never tried it that are now trying it. So like, how have you guys dealt with, you know, the demand? You know, I think you came on the show back in, must have been April, kind of early on in the pandemic, and you guys were having issues keeping stock of things because they were selling.
Yeah. It's been a while. I can't believe it's been almost a year since we had that conversation and since the beginning of the pandemic. And as the unofficial official partner of Uber Eats accounts all over the country, obviously in cannabis, excited to be here with Travis. We, you know, it's been a wild ride, right? I think that to your point, in the beginning of the pandemic, you know, we saw a big shift in consumer behavior in cannabis, and that was pretty well documented. There's been a lot that's been written on that. And, you know, people in many of the states that we operate as a medical provider, this is medicine for people. And so there was a lot of nervousness. People were stocking up. There was a lot of sort of rush on products, and we were having a difficult time keeping up with demand. We had the exact opposite problem. I always joke around of people saying like, hey, we're just trying to keep the lights on. It's like, hey, we're vertically integrated. So we grow and manufacture, distribute and sell in every market that we operate in. Our problem was the opposite. The lights are staying on. Now we got to keep everything from burning up, right? And we've got to make sure that there's people to be able to work in the cultivation facility. So obviously COVID protocols were insane. And we were very fortunate that, you know, we had a fairly minor effect, statistically speaking, against a lot of other industries because a lot of the hard work that went in with the company to putting these safety protocols in place. But, you know, the last 6 months, we started to see a bit of normalization back into, you know, consumer behaviors and the way that that's patterning. But the one thing that's consistent is that, you know, since we were declared essential as being part of the pharmacy programs in a lot of these states that we operate, everything has been up and to the right. And it's not just for Columbia Care, it's for an industry as a whole. And with what happened with the last election and everything else, there was a lot of really interesting articles that were written about, you know, the only clear winner is marijuana and the cannabis industry. Like there is, you know, the support nationally around the normalization of this product set is pretty staggering. It's like the only thing that Americans can really truly agree on right now in the political sphere is that there needs to be some sort of reform and normalization when it comes to cannabis. And so, you know, we've put tools in place like virtual care, which I think we had just launched, Jeff. I think we talked about that on the first. Yeah, we're, you know, a virtual shopping experience. We're launching some additional tools to help people in finding products and understanding a bit more about, you know, kind of this concept of empathetic education when it comes to, you know, lots of people are interested. You know, my mom started taking CBD. Like people need to be educated. They want to understand a bit more about the products. So we're trying to put a big focus there as well. And then the M&A has been wild and incredibly exciting. I mean, we welcomed TGS, who's the premier company in Colorado, an incredibly mature business, serving a ton of customers there. Project Cannabis in California, they grow some amazing stuff, and they've got some cool retail locations. We added THC SD in San Diego, and then we announced G-Leaf, who is probably the premier cultivator and provider of products in the Mid-Atlantic. So It's been wild. I don't think it's going to slow down anytime soon, but I think that there's been a pretty seismic shift in how people are viewing the cannabis industry as a whole and sort of that kind of curious segment that you were talking about. People, you know, you're sitting at home and you're looking for ways to, you know, you can't go out and you're looking for ways to enjoy your weekend or to unwind at the end of the night. And a lot of people are kind of saying, hey, not having a hangover the next day sounds pretty good. So it's been a surge for sure.
Yeah. Cool. Great insight there, Jesse. And congrats on all the acquisitions as well. Acquisitions Thanks. In the air, it seems. Melissa, you know, I've had you on the show recently, probably a few weeks ago, and you were a ton of fun. So thanks again, always bringing your A game. But, you know, you're just another interesting industry during a pandemic that you think, well, wait a second, people haven't been able to see each other, you know, so how does that impact that business? And you guys have really, like, engagement is through the roof because people need connection, especially if you're single and you're home and you can't go out and you can't meet people, you're turning to digital. So, you know, you're just, you know, I'm excited to have you on the show because it's kind of like almost an oxymoron if you think about it. It's like you have this great platform. Right. And people are, they're actually building relationships with each other like this through the screen before they're even meeting. So
that's exactly right. And first of all, Jeff, you just have a knack for connecting like really interesting, cool people. I really wish we were in person so we could like all go have some Columbia Care products or, you know, chill together. And we were talking about this, that, at OkCupid, what keeps us up all night is connection and how do we facilitate that? And we are proudly and exclusively inclusive. So OkCupid is a heritage of always supporting LGBTQ, non-binary, whatever that is. We have always leaned into that. And the challenge that none of us expected was, holy shit, in a global pandemic, how do you connect people? And, you know, those of us on the podcast, we're all fairly coupled up. But if you're single and living in a city, which is by far OkCupid's biggest audience, you lost all the connections you had, right? You're going to the office, going to the gym, the local coffee shop, the bar, all of those things ceased to exist. And the way that you could connect with people was through your dating app. And so what was really interesting, OkCupid's global, and as a geography went into lockdown, engagement soared. And I don't mean little incremental lifts. I mean, you know, bigger than we would ever see. And in all the metrics, as a dating app, what you look at are things like, are people downloading? Are they sending likes? Are they sending messages? And every metric was exploding. And that was really exciting to us. When we layered on what happened in the world between Black Lives Matter, between the election in the U.S., we added in those components too. So we were the only dating app with a Black Lives Matter badge. I'm just mashing up all the words so that you could, you know, essentially your dating app is where you put your bumper sticker. You don't have a car if you live in San Francisco or New York or LA or Chicago, probably. You don't have a yard where you can put your vote for whomever sign, right? And so we leaned into those things to make connecting in this crazy, really tough year, right? Because dating is hard. And then you throw a pandemic in there. And then you add all these other life-changing moments and movements. And we leaned into those things to make it easier to connect on issues. And by the way, that also, you know, those are ingredients and building blocks for a healthy, happy relationship, right? It's that you both do care about climate change. And we're the only dating app that matches on that, or that, you know, factors that into the algorithm. And so for, I think what happened for OkCupid was really interesting in that, you know, we're like, oh, gee, we've been around a while, but between people needing to connect, and frankly, let's be honest, like, if you're 27, you're no longer at the office, your boss isn't looking over your shoulder, you are swiping, and you are talking and messaging, and you're doing that at hours you were not doing before COVID, right? You may have done it just in the evening. So we saw these other interesting changes, like people were on at 10 a.m., 11, you know, we just saw these really interesting things. And then you layer in these other, you know, these other movements, and that's what helped, you know, create a lot of love and romance, and people slowed down and they sent love letters and they did what we're doing, which is your first date is video. And then we'll meet up if we can, or if both people feel cool with that. And so we're expecting a marriage boom and a baby boom and all of those, a sex explosion when vaccines roll out more. It's going to be fun. I feel like we all need to work together on some of those things.
Yeah. So that's actually a perfect segue into like what I was thinking about next. And it's like, okay, we've been dealing with this for a year. We've all shifted our businesses. We've shifted our strategies. Some of our strategies, like Travis, even what you were saying before, like long-term strategies now have shifted based on what's happened in the last 12 months. But let's be real, we will get through this and we will go back to somewhat of a more, I don't want to use the word normal, but, you know, a different cadence that it's been the last 12 months. Like things are starting to open up as people get vaccinated. Obviously, people will start to travel more. We'll start to have like in-person meetings more frequently. Some offices will open. You know, some may never open because the working remote thing has worked so well. But I'm just curious from you guys, like, how are you thinking about that now? Because things will start changing again, right? People coming into stores, people being out more. Obviously, you know, ride sharing, you know, will probably bump back up. You'll have that on the dating side, that final, that in-person moment of like real-time connection. So I don't know, like, how are you guys thinking about that now, like from a strategy perspective, you know? And when is that moment? Like, Jesse, for you, obviously, you know, big part of your business is people going in, talking to bud tenders, understanding what's good. You know, you have that kind of like, you know, in-person talk that's kind of been gone with curbside pickup and all that stuff. So, you know, when do you finally say, okay, we're going to, you know, resume to what it used to be?
Yeah. I think it's tough to say, right? I think it's a market by market as we look of when it's really going to resume, right? Or whether, to your point, it'll ever really be the same. And I think that as we think about the future of retail and we think about customer experience, and there's going to be a lot of changes in cannabis retail over the next, let's say, 5 years, right? Because at market by market, as regulations continue to change and shopping experiences change, you know, some markets right now being very medical, almost like a pharmacy-like experience. And then you have California where it feels like a very normal shopping experience. You can go in and interact with the products. And I think the one thing that remains consistent is thoughtfulness in the way that you engage with the employees there. You know, we do pride ourselves on having, you know, pound for pound the best when it comes to in-store experience and education, and being able to really engage with patients and adult use recreational customers and answer a lot of questions. And so I think that bringing that into a new sort of digitally focused, digital first environment, where not only can you engage in store, but you can have very similar experiences out of the four walls, I think is a huge focus for us. And it's somewhere where we will continue to develop. I think the other thing is when you think about experiential retail, there's so many things that seem so normal to all of us before that are not going to feel the same. You're not going to touch things the same way. You know, in cannabis, we have sniff jars, right? Are sniff jars really going to be a thing in the way that they were? Are you going to want to like lean over something and smell where a bunch of other people have been leaning over too? I think that we're a ways away from stuff being really sort of feeling completely normal. So it's, we have to figure out what are those 2.0 moments that we're developing towards? How do we relay and provide the same level of transparency and education without leaning on some of the old tricks that were sort of tried and true that we all were really comfortable with from a shopping experience point of view? And that's not unique to cannabis, right? Like, I think it's the same thing for a Sephora as it is for a Columbia Care. Everybody's going to have to evolve and everybody's going to have to think about things a little bit differently. I think what makes our business unique is we're federally illegal and we have no interstate commerce and the regulations are different in every market that we operate. So that, I think that adds a layer of like, it's tough to have a standard operating procedure for these things, but we're really focusing on that and striving to think about how does, and I think digital is a huge part of that. How does digital and proprietary built solutions continue to give us an advantage in the marketplace?
Yeah. And Jesse, I think, you know, it'd be very interesting kind of if you look back and let's just say cannabis wasn't deemed essential during this period, like you might not be up here today.
I totally agree. And it, you know, I think that if we weren't such a medically focused company with such a medically focused mission and we didn't have the roots that we do in the markets that we serve in the pharmacy programs and many other companies like us, having built that foundation and really serving a patient base, then I think that, you know, maybe that wouldn't have been the case. You know, I look at a market like Massachusetts where for a period of time, medical was deemed essential, but adult use was not.
Right.
And, you know, there's a phenomenon in cannabis. Yeah. You know, not everyone after a market flips adult use, not everyone who walks into a recreational dispensary would not have been a patient 3 years before. Right. There's a lot of people who don't identify as being sick that are coming in to integrate products into their life to make them feel better. And so I think that that was really rewarding to see that the vast majority of governors and programs understood that that was the case and that we saw that continuity in service. And I think that that's really what's guided things moving forward and why we'll continue to see that essential designation.
Yeah. Travis, just curious, at least on the driver front, you know, have you seen any type of statistics most recently too, as things are starting to open up more, that there's more drivers, they're reaching out maybe to, I don't know what the cadence is right now, but have you seen like a big shift in like things starting to return?
Yeah, it's funny because, and this is where we benefit from being a truly global company, is like we can kind of start to see the insights in markets that have done this much more smartly, right, than the US have, and did the right precautions and lockdowns, et cetera.
Did we not do it right?
Yeah, it's weird, right? Like debates, right? But yeah, so I mean, we're starting to see a lot of like work out of Asia and Australia, especially, you know, where it's like things are very much so kind of like back to normal, you know, kind of like there's very similar levels of kind of just like ridership overall. If anything, yeah, like we actually have a supply problem versus a demand problem, you know, where we're actually making sure that we have maybe more drivers than we had. Cause I think, you know, Melissa, to your point, like if you think about like the sexplosion that you were talking about, like consumers have this like visceral like desire now to get out and to travel and to see people and to go out and like get like stoned or drunk and need something to like kind of take them like home. Like there's a need for kind of the product right now. So I think what we've been doing is trying to just get ahead of that and whatever it looks like. And it all ties back to recovery, but first and foremost is just like safety and just making sure that, you know, the riders know that it's safe, the drivers know that it's safe, you know, whether it's like coming on saying like, listen, if you don't have a mask on, you're not getting in an Uber. This isn't a political debate, like no mask, no ride. You know, making sure that we did mask verification in the app, both for drivers and riders. You can cancel if you're a driver and you don't feel safe. You know, even the work we're doing now, it's like, we're giving out 10 million free rides for people in underserved communities to get the vaccine, you know, and all of this is a part of kind of helping be something that helps the world move again and kind of get back to where we were. So, you know, that's the cool thing, is we're starting to see this happen in other markets where we see this like desire in markets that it's not quite, you know, ready and acceptable for people to kind of go out and about. But as soon as it is, like the product is there, we've done everything that we can do. Like it is the most safe environment that you can actually be in. And you're not going to feel, you know, hesitant because of transportation, right? Transportation should never be a barrier for healthcare, for any sort of, you know, just like fun, whatever you want. Like that shouldn't be the barrier. And then I think on the other side of our business, on the delivery side, you know, so we're preparing on the mobility side through the lens of like, how do we reinvent the product a little bit to kind of get people back? On the delivery side, it's continuing innovation. So it's like, okay, cool. We also made other acquisitions with like Corner Shop, which is like the largest like grocery delivery provider in Latin America. So now it's like, whether you want your groceries delivered, we made investment in pharmacy as well. So if you need your prescription delivered, if you need to like, again, bake a cake and send it to someone, it's Amazon owns next day delivery. We want to own next hour delivery because we have that infrastructure and we have the ability for all of that movement. So while one side of the house is reinvention, the other side is continued innovation and creating a solution that just allows for that movement.
Yeah, no, that's great. I think, Melissa, like, I think your business, you're already probably starting to see the flourish of dating that's happening now in real time. And by the way, you have to talk to my mom because one, she heard you on the podcast. She's like, Melissa's fabulous. I'm like, I know she is.
I like your mom already. I knew I liked your family. The next interview we do is going to be with your mom. We're going to set her up on OkCupid.
She said, can Melissa set me up on two dates? I'm like, she runs marketing. She's not a matchmaker.
No, I would be honored. I would be honored. And I insist. Where does she live?
New York City.
Oh my God. Okay. And if she's half as fun as you, she said, this will be fun.
Can I put in a selfish request? After you help Jeff's mom, you'll help me, because you're in the beginning. You're like, all of us. I'm like, wait, yeah, I'm single, so I'm like, maybe this is my moment, right, for like proper like bigger matchmaking. So if we can take that as a AI for all of us after this,
Travis, that'd be great. This is going to be amazing. This is going to be great. I've got you. I've got, perfect. I totally got you.
Perfect.
What's already happening here, Travis?
This is why I came on, honestly. Like, this is the sole reason.
And I am so here for this. So
perfect.
This is amazing. Jeff's mom is a catch, obviously. Travis, you're such a catch. This is going to be fun. We're going to do a spinoff podcast series about, yes, like chemistry and matchmaking.
So guys, I'm curious, Melissa, I'm curious maybe to hear from you first, just because like we're all executives at various companies and we're all working remote. Some of us have done it more than others, but you know, I see you're maybe in your bedroom. Maybe, Melissa?
I'm in my bedroom. Okay. Yeah. Oh, sorry, I was nodding. This is a podcast, so I need to talk.
Jesse, you're in your living room. Travis, you're in your outdoor, indoor kind of lanai.
Lanai. Well, it's lanai. Lanai. Golden Girls lanai.
Lanai in Sarasota. But no, I'm just curious for you guys, like, because I think everyone can relate to this that's actually watching right now. Like, what's been the biggest challenge? Just kind of running a business from home, you know?
Oh,
I could name a few, but like, you know, Melissa, I know you have kids running around.
Yeah, I have kids running around, and it's that, it's such a silver lining though, because I feel really passionate about, you know, keeping moms in the workplace. I think that this, I hope this is a wake up call for companies to, especially in the US, to do right by women. And the numbers are so horrendous. 3% of board seats in the US are women. What the F is that? And so I think if we can start, I think that this is a reset of, you can accomplish great things when you create some flexibility, and let's not make people choose. And if we want to have diverse, innovative companies, you have to have diverse, innovative, interesting talent. And so I'll get off my soapbox in a minute. But so, you know, the truth is, it's hard sometimes, but it's amazing that I can do this podcast. And then before my next call, I'll run out. I'll like chase my 1.5-year-old for 5 minutes and then I'm back. It's, you know, that is an incredible thing. And so, you know, that's okay. It's all right.
You're getting your exercise in too, right?
What's that?
You're getting exercise in also.
Yeah.
You're getting exercise in.
So much exercise.
Unlike me, where I sit in a chair all day long and I don't move.
But you do like, Discovery Channel epic, like fishing on the weekends. So like you.
On the weekends. But what about the 5 days during the business week?
I don't know. You live in like a beautiful part of America. We're not worried about you. You're like very fit and active.
Not worried.
Jesse, what about you? You got like a beard, you've grown your hair out, everything during the pandemic.
It's true. I'm wearing a hat. Travis would be mortified if he saw the ponytail that I have behind my hat right now. So I'm not even going to get into that. And I just want to put this out there. Jeff and I are happy to continue to stay engaged as a panel for this matchmaking. You know, since we are wiped up, but we are happy to stay in on this. I'm volunteering you for that. Look, the toughest thing, there's been so much about this that's been like bizarre, right? Having never sort of been a full work from home. I did it for a stint with a startup for a while when I was younger. But I think that the toughest part for me is I remember my dad growing up. I always had so much respect for the way that he could separate his work life, which was very chaotic, and his personal life. My dad was home for dinner. He was a stockbroker. And so market closed. He was home for dinner every night, never talked about work, never brought it home. It was always family time when he came home. And it was amazing. Like, I just had this idea in my head that like, that's how it's supposed to be. And I remember my dad used to tell me that his commute was his decompression moment, where it was like, this is how I very cleanly separate that life from this life. So it's like you get in the car and you've got that time to reset, listen to the radio, do whatever. And when you come into the house, you've now processed everything. I think with all of us working from home, and you know, we have a young son, and Melissa, to your point, I mean, I already had so much respect for my wife, but when you watch it firsthand and you see someone working and trying to deal with a toddler, and it's like, I honestly have no idea. But that no division, I think, has made it very difficult to not have these lives bleed together, where dinner, you know, you treat it as this sacred moment, and it doesn't become like you're sitting there on your phone constantly and you have a toddler looking at you like, you know, are you going to pay attention to me? So that for me has been one of the most difficult things, is sort of having some sort of semblance of division between these lives. And I think all of us know when you work in fast, high growth industries and things like that, that's bad enough as it is, right? Like there's really, you're working all the time anyway, but I think that working from home has made it that much tougher.
Yeah. What about you, Travis?
It's funny because I think that like, I almost like talk about it like I've been preparing my whole life for this because I am such an introvert, you know, and I think that, you know, I'm someone who's like, I will use any excuse I can not to have to go on like, you know, like if I'm like group dinners at work or if like a partner is like trying to take us out, I'm like, oh, I wish I could, but make up something on the spot. So like I feel great. Like I feel like I've been able to kind of like do more than I've ever been able to do. I don't have to deal with humans the way that I used to have to deal with them. Cut to like, why is he still single? That's crazy. But I also like the hardest thing for me has been like, cause I'm, you know, living at my childhood home. Like, you know, it's more of just like we saw this right before this started, you know, like my mom's poking around the corner, you know, like, do you want some sweet tea? Do you, what? I'm like, no, mom, I'm like, I've got this thing to do. I'm like, shh. Right. And it's like, you know, she doesn't understand what I do.
But you gotta eat.
So literally, she's like, you're wasting away. I'm like, I've gained 10 pounds, but thank you. And it's like, you know, she tells all her friends, she's like, you know, Travis works on computers, you know, so no one has any idea what I do. They think I'm just like, you know, like at the geek squad. Right. Like I'm like tech support, right, for international companies. So it's.
Yeah, Travis, hi, the Uber drivers on 6th Street, they're lost.
Literally, they're like, they're locked out of their app. They need some help. I'm like, cool. Yeah, let me get on it.
Awesome.
So like, that's the worst part for me is just like, but then I've also just started to own that. And my mom's like, come into camera shots now. And it's just like, you know, people at work know her. And like, this is my life. And this is like the way that we're actually able to work. But I actually think I'm going to have I locked the door. Don't worry.
No, I think she was just peeking through.
Did she really?
I think so.
She's peeking through the curtain. Oh my god, that's so cute. Literally, bring her on.
Literally, would not surprise me. Literally.
Oh my gosh, this is the best. Wait, that's so cute.
But yeah, I'm more worried about when all of this stops because I think that's going to be my like harshest reality check is having to go back into any sort of normalcy. Where I'm expected to be like in an office and interact with people again.
Do you guys have any specific like routines in the morning? I know for me, it's like I get out of bed, I come straight to my office, I turn the computer on, I go through emails, even though I've already looked at emails 7,000 times. Then I go and have my coffee, then I go back to my computer. And the next thing I know, I'm in the throes of work and I have not gone outside and like smelled the air. So, you know, and also, by the way, the phone use is terrible too. Like walking around the house, just, you know, looking at the phone when I'm coming back from the computer, it's like, it's actually, I think, an addiction of some sort that because of the pandemic has caused us to be even more connected than we were before, which is not necessarily healthy. So that's my routine in the morning, guys. I don't know about you. It's terrible.
I bought like an old school alarm clock and I won't sleep with my phone in my room anymore because I was like getting to that point. So now it's like I set the alarm. I refuse to look at my phone until I have my first meeting. And that to me is like when I'm on the clock, then I can check my email. I've never had a work phone and a personal phone before, but this is what made me get the two because I was able to kind of separate the two. And I don't look at my work phone until I actually kind of like start working. So that's my routine is just like not working until I actually start to work.
You guys here.
That's so good. That's really good. We've got to create my morning routine is like the, you know, I've two little ones. And so, you know, I come in for snuggles and cuddles and I don't look up, I'm a little bit similar, but I really try not to look at my phone until, you know, like I'm starting the day, kind of like with you, but I think I'd like to be a little more rigid, but you do have to create those boundaries, don't you? Of like, just not, because everything is bleeding together. You don't have that break that, you know, Jesse was talking about, like the commute home, your Uber home or whatever it was to like unwind.
People, I know people are doing like fake commutes, you know, where they're like, oh, I'm commuting, sorry, but they're going for a run or they're working out.
Okay. Yeah.
I tried that too.
I thought you meant just like sitting in their car in the driveway. Like,
by the way, that would be really incredible. Listening to their favorite podcast, Alchemy, right? In their car, not going anywhere.
Totally.
Jesse, what about you?
Yeah. Nothing exciting. I'm by far worse than Melissa and Travis. I check my phone right away the second I wake up. And then the one thing that I do try to do, though, is after I get through that first sort of scan, you know, just make sure that the world's not on fire. I try to just put that down, go hang out with Ev, our son, Everett. And then I take him to school every morning. He goes to a preschool. And so like, that's my routine. It's like, get him in the car and have that time with him where it's sort of, you know, even though it's not that much, it's uninterrupted one-on-one time to talk about like, hey, what are you going to do today? And what are you going to learn today? And drive him to school, drop him off, and then come home and let the chaos begin. So that's pretty much it. Sometimes I shower, which is exciting. You know,
sometimes. Like,
you know, yeah, sometimes.
Very so, easy to forget yeah, that at 6 o'clock, but oh my God, I did not take a shower today.
It's unreal.
Okay, so I feel like we could probably keep talking for the entire day, but I know we're all super busy. And, you know, I just want to thank you three for coming on the show. And obviously, you know, giving your input and talking about the business. And obviously, you know, through the pandemic, obviously there's been some great positive outcomes, you know, with all of your businesses. So appreciate the insight. It's been great. This was awesome. So I appreciate it.
I mean, selfishly, I was on here to do a down to smoke campaign with Hobbly and have Uber take people to the dispensary to buy stuff together. So I don't know why we're not doing that.
Jesse, as soon as we kind of start coming back into a groove of like restaurants, you know, being normal again, we're doing a digital fork with cannabis.
Absolutely. And we should do a matchmaking.
We're the only dating app with a 420 filter because we know that's a thing that, you know, people want to match on. FYI, Jesse. So we will be doing a partnership and I'll be doing a real life partnership with Travis when we get him on OkCupid.
We're going to do that show live.
Can we do that live?
Wait, maybe we should have
I'm in.
Yeah, we can't. Yeah, Jeff, we have to prioritize your mom. So I'm totally selfless.
Yeah.
And this is Travis's worst nightmare as an introvert to like have to do that publicly. Like,
can you imagine? I would die.
Travis, we're gonna actually die, but it'll be so fun.
Yeah, it'd be great. Great for the ratings.
I already have a few things that I'm thinking for Travis right now. So I got
he's such a catch. This will be so fun. But thank you so much for Jeff. You always have the most interesting folks, way more interesting than me. It was really fun. So
awesome. Well, you guys have a great day and thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.